Mr. Pop.
Let's hope he never becomes the captain, because God knows what kind of armband he'll be wearing.
This is Ruck and Roll, your weekly shot of sport and music with Kevin Hillier, Brian Mannix and Mark Fine.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is the show we call The One After the Grand Final. It's the big one, the one after Lucy stopped listening, the one after Lucy boycotted us. This is Ruck and Roll. My name's Kevin Hillier. With me is Brian Mannix.
Good evening, Kev. Good evening, Fonny. And a special hello to you, Lucy, if you're still listening.
And, of course, the other member is Mark Fine. Hello, Finey, son of Lucy.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we all?
Good. Now, you had to drop something off to Lucy's place. What was that, your apology?
No.
Your explanation?
A diversion. just some food, but...
Something to luckily, occupy so she didn't listen to the show.
Luckily, and sort of unfortunately, people in their 90s, and she's perfectly with it, but she's not with the latest in technology, so that saved me last week.
Excellent. So your secret is safe with us then.
She's asked how to rig it up for this week, so
let's keep that in mind.
All on our best behaviour.
Yeah, right. Fair enough.
The one after the grand final. What did you do grand final day, Mr. Mannix?
I went down to, I watched Robbie in my apartment. Then I went down to Lucky Phil's. We had a bit of a grand final party, but I left at 3/4 time. What a dreadful game it was.
Well, you stayed longer than the Swans did.
Well, did they even show up? But I got to say, I thought Robbie was the best that they've ever had. It almost went into, it wasn't as good as the Super Bowl, but you could see he's going, this is what they do at the Super Bowl. He used the entire ground and the little car and the dancers. No, I thought he was terrific, and he did his homework to, so Australians would embrace him, the Farnham thing and the Warney thing. And I thought whoever worked out his plan did a really good job, and I thought, he was fantastic.
Yep, I agree. What did you do? You went to the game, of course, with your daughter, Harper, and it wouldn't have been...
Andy.
Andy, okay.
She's the Swan supporter.
Oh, okay. So it wouldn't have been a happy day, really.
No, it's really weird. You see, because I live close to the ground and walking distance, I just decided to walk. I wasn't interested in the pre-game entertainment.
Oh, okay.
So I just decided to walk to the ground, get there at like 2:25. Now, when you go to a normal game 5 minutes before the bounce, there's quite a few people milling in. I swear, on the walk from my place to the MCG, which is a very common way for people to go, right up to walking in, I saw five people.
They were either in there or wanted to be nowhere near the place.
They were all in. I mean, it was really weird. I was completely on my own. Very strange. Walked in there, very busy time at work. Had a great week at work because today is Jewish New Year.
I think.
Not quite sure the actual dates, I should, but last night there's a big meal for New Year's Eve. So great time at work. We'd been working very hard. So at halftime I went home and went to sleep because I knew I had to be up at 4:30. So I paid $450 a quarter for two of the worst quarters of football I've ever seen.
Yeah, well,
I reckon the reason people were already in there, because I think Robbie would have, people wanted to see Robbie.
Yeah, everybody said it was brilliant. Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah. That was where you almost got your money's worth out of seeing Robbie. And thank God he was good. Yeah.
Well, in the funny, he's the first person since Meatloaf that we've spent this amount of time talking about his performance at the grand final after the actual game, because most times we talk about the game, whether it was the Doggies, you know, coming, breaking that drought or a close game here or whatever, but this time there's nothing to talk about with the game. Everything's talk about everything else, to be honest. I thought he was fantastic. I thought, as you did, Brian, I thought they've actually twigged to the fact that if we're going to do this out in the middle of the ground, let's use the ground. Otherwise, I mean, to be honest, and in sort of not speaking on their behalf, but I remember when Lionel Richie did it. I remember when Meatloaf did it. I think even when Farnham did it, they had him up in the grandstand in some little box area. Yeah. That, quite frankly, was just bloody embarrassing. They might as well. It was almost as if they had him there. Oh well, we'll just stick him over there, let him sing a couple of songs, then piss him off. Whereas this actually was, this is part of the grand part of the, you know, the whole show starts now. And I thought he was terrific. I thought the whole thing was bloody brilliant, to be honest.
It would have been better if Kylie had done it, but apparently she didn't want to or wasn't available, which is crazy. Maybe she just wants to do her own grand final, which is she'll probably get eventually. But and Delta was good, but it would have been better if it was Kylie. But he just got that swagger and, you know, right from the word go, right, I thought he worked the crowd beautifully. Like he's going, all right, come on, cheer. And he's, you know, and he's making them sing right from the word go. And then, you know, at one point he did have the whole crowd singing his song. Yep. And, you know, I thought, well, that's a big ask to connect from that distance to that many people and get them all to do your bidding. But, you know, he was faultless and, you know, I guess he set a standard for what we can expect next year. You know, you're going to have to, I don't know who you get to follow that. And what did you think of the halftime stuff, fellas?
Well, had you gone? Did you stay and watch any of the halftime?
No, I saw a bit of that.
Okay, yeah. So you were at the ground.
I just want to say this. Mm-hmm. I know it's pretty unique to have I think it's an all-girl band with a drummer that sings, right?
Oh, G-Flip, yep.
Yep. But that singing drummer has got to be good at one of those two things.
Oh, what?
Because she was good at neither of them. What did she sing, that a Wolf Mother song or
no,
something?
No, Jet Song. Are You Going to Be My Girl?
Oh, the Jet Song. Yeah, I was there the year Jack were performing, and then I was at the party with them afterwards. You know, you know, when they were playing afterwards, I was actually with them. They were good blokes. They were great.
Yeah.
That was the year that guy Forsyth, you know, the Australian gold medalist, the pole vaulter.
Drew.
What was his name? The guy that won the, not Forsyth, the guy that won the gold medal in the pole vault for us.
Hooker.
The Olympics. Hooker, yeah.
Stephen Hooker.
He gave me his gold medal. And I was wearing it, and about 20 minutes later he goes, do you know where my gold medal is? I said, yeah, I've been looking after it. I strongly suggest you take better care of it.
Oh, well, Jeremy Cameron put his premiership medal over a cow's head and lost it for about several hours, in the early hours of Sunday morning or Monday morning. Yeah, look, the halftime thing, do you want to go first, Brian, or do you want me to go?
I'll go first. I just saw, you know, I watched it when, yeah, okay, fair enough. But geez, it got such a shitbagging on social media. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I thought it was okay and stuff, you know. And I guess what I came with was like, well, you're following Robbie Williams. And no matter what you did, he was just so great. It was always going to come off secondary. And there's been a lot of.
Hang on. They had the Sydney Swans as a buffer.
Well, there you go. Yeah,
that's true.
But, you know, a lot of people complaining that it was, you know, too First Nation and. You know, that's not something I'm going
to. Oh, it's all been everyone
agree with.
Social media has said it's woke, and it's all about all those. And you can, I mean, that's what social media does. That's what happens on social media. I didn't particularly like the version of Solid Rock that they did. To be honest, I like it the way I'm used to hearing it, and thought it should have been like that. Gee, Flip, I don't know why the cameras continued to take photos of her ass and her underpants. I was in no way interested in that. They didn't do it with anyone else. Why'd they do it with her?
I was wondering whether she's, you know, getting a bit of sponsorship.
They didn't do it with Brian when he used to play.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
Because he never wore any underpants.
That's exactly right. I thought that was really poorly done by Channel 7, to be honest, more than G-Flip, but who's now being called G-String or G-Crack or one of those expressions.
Oh, really?
I remember the first time I ever saw her play, she did a couple of songs on a New Year's Eve thing in Sydney on the ABC, and she did a cover of a Creedence song and another song, and I can't remember what it was. And she was bloody terrific. I thought she was really good. But, I agree. I didn't think that was the best thing in the world.
I thought it was as good as a lot of other main entertainments we've had grand finals. Yeah. This year we actually got a treat, and it was like, wow, that was sensational.
Yeah.
That was good.
I think we like Robbie Williams too, because he takes the piss out of himself.
Yes. I think that's really attractive to Australians.
Yep.
And then, you know, just to really embrace himself, his tribute, you know, he said, when he sang Angels and had everybody singing it to Warnie, it was like, wow.
Yep.
And then, you know, let's get him in even more. And, you know, I know Farnham's Crook and this is like your national anthem. So, bang, off he goes, you're the voice. So,
yeah,
it was a really well thought out show.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see who they come up with next year, because there's also the other thing that's happened on social media is, well, why don't we have an overseas act? Why don't we have, Australian? Well, there probably wasn't anybody. I don't think there is anybody in this country. We don't do right. One thing that Robbie Williams said during that that whole thing, he said, and here this is for Australia's greatest rock star, Shane Warne. And I thought, you know, he's probably bloody right, you know, because outside of Michael Hutchins, we've never done an international rock star who's actually been an international rock star. Our musicians are fantastic. Glenn Shorrock, Little River Band, Colin Hay, Men at Work, Air Supply, the Bee Gees. The Bee Gees were close, but they were Poms probably more than Aussies.
But they didn't have that paparazzi value that, say, Warnie and Hutchie did.
What we see is the rock star thing, which is what Michael Hutchins was. He's the nearest thing we've ever had to it. And Warnie probably was the biggest rock star we've had in this country. I thought he got that right. But, yeah, I'm not sure we've got anybody who could do that kind of performance that Robbie Williams did.
Look, I'm always one for go have a look around Australia, see what you got. But, you know, don't bring, you know, Bryan Adams here. You know, we've done that. But, some mediocre overseas act.
You'd have to bring Springsteen, wouldn't you? It wouldn't. Isn't Springsteen
there? Well, yeah, you'd bring Springsteen or Foo Fighters.
I don't even know that they would do the because the thing about Robbie Williams was that it's in all demographics. It's from 5 to 50, you know, 550, to be honest, who love him. Is anyone you can think of finally that would fit the bill?
Rammstein. I'd go. Oh, that'd be good. They could sing their song Buk Dich, which means bend over.
Oh, goodness me. The game was a total anti-climax. I mean, Geelong, no one take anything away from Geelong. God, they were good, but
they were magnificent. They were so good in that first quarter.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Every player, like Mark O'Connor, you name it, everybody was marking it. Dangerfield was brilliant out of the middle. Now, I didn't see the second half. Somebody, Isaac Smith, must have played bloody well for Dangerfield not to win the medal.
Oh, he did. He did.
But they were brilliant, and Sydney were just shell-shocked. And all of a sudden, you looked around at all these Sydney players and thought, who are you? What on earth are you doing here?
Who's this Robbie Fox? I've never heard of him.
Actually, he was their best player.
He probably was too.
In the first half. But I'm looking at other guys, I'm thinking, you know, really? I mean, that's not going to work. No, he's no good. No, that's no. They've got no one in the midfield. That's not working.
I reckon a really interesting thing when you look back on it is the call about the two injured players. Chris Scott decided not to play Holmes, and John decided to play Sam Reed. That tells a massive tale of the thinking of the two football clubs going into that game.
I mean, look, they've won, 15 games in a row or something, Geelong. They've
16 had a pretty now. Good run.
Yeah, not bad. So, you know, credit where credit's due.
Oh, no, they were fantastic. They're the best team all year and they won the grand final. If you're a Geelong supporter, you'd be sitting back going, well, that's about what I was hoping for and that's what I got.
They sort of persisted with older players and some younger players got better. They picked up De Conning, very, very good fullback. It's all rosy. Coming up trumps at Geelong, and they get 8 home games down there. And
oh, here we go.
Well, they do.
Have you both seen the pictures from their Mad Monday celebrations today?
No.
Ryan, you seen it?
I haven't seen the pictures, but I heard that a few of them arrived in a retirement village van.
About 16 of them, actually. Most of the team wobbled their way out of a retirement village van onto their Zimmer frames, and they actually had makeup artists do their hair and their beards and all that sort of stuff. So they actually really did look the part. It was fantastic. It was really well done. And funnily enough, social media is hooked into them, saying that they're belittling old people. I'm sorry. It's just this world we live in now. If you do not have a thick skin, you're not going to make it. You're going to get crushed under it because you just have to have a thick skin these days. Because no matter what you do, some bastard's going to jump on Twitter and have a crack at you.
Yeah. What's it called? You had a term for it last week.
It's trolling. I mean, but you mean that virtue signalling thing?
Virtue signalling. Yeah, I like that.
I don't bother. Woke, virtue signalling, gaslight, all these bloody expressions that are coming through. I'm sorry. I'm finding hard to keep up with them all.
I want to start, they've got all these acronyms that they love, LOL and whatever. And I've tried to get one going and it's got to take hold.
GFY?
GFY.
GFY.
Yeah.
Geelong.
Go fuck yourself.
And just a special hello to Lucy, if you're listening.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Oh, yeah, that's right. But GFY has to, they can all GFY.
A bit of GFY. Yep.
TFT.
GFT.
Or STFU.
Oh, now that one is around a bit, though.
What's STFU?
I've seen that one. That's starting to get a little bit of traction.
I don't know if we're still talking sport, but the World Cup's coming up, and
which World Cup?
The soccer.
Yep.
And did you see Australia and New Zealand games?
We played on Sunday, and I haven't seen the result, but my understanding was that we were going to play a whole team that had hardly ever played for Australia before. What happened?
We won 2-0 and we won the first one 1-0. I know that the game I saw mostly was the second one, and he's looking for players and stuff, and there's nobody there that really jumps out except for a guy, our Samoan guys we've got. I don't know.
There was one guy, he was lightning quick.
Yeah, Jewel.
Kuol, yeah. He's the boy who looks like he's been signed by Newcastle in the Premier League.
I'd be taking him.
They've got to take him. He's the only one. He did three really big runs. He got a goal, I think, or he set up a couple of goals. He's just so exciting. And Cummings, yeah, that other guy looked all right.
Oh, the little and the Duke looks bloke. Yep.
Scottish, well,
Who is this bloke Cummings?
Well, I don't know a lot about him, but my understanding is that he was, I think he's Australian born, but he lived in England and played some in England, and he's been playing for Central Coast Mariners or Newcastle in the A-League last year and kicked a lot of goals. And there was a...
Because he got a penalty. He scored a penalty.
Right? Massive push for him to be in the squad.
He scored a goal penalty. When the fuck was his celebration?
Don't know. I didn't see it.
he would have got a goal had the guy's hands... one of the defenders put his hand in and blocked it. So he would have got the goal without the penalty.
But he scored the penalty.
He did.
Very curious as to what that celebration was.
Okay. Well, he's been busting to get into the team for years and years, and he's always been mouth off. So, you know, if I get in there, I'm going to kick goals. Yeah. Well, he's played for Australia for 10 minutes now, and he's got a goal. So that's why he's so excited.
Well, he was either doing that one where he's telling the crowd to, you know, shush, stop talking.
Oh, that one, yeah, okay.
Or he was doing a Nazi salute and a Hitler moustache. Now, I'm not quite sure.
I've been going with the first one, I reckon, Finey.
Yeah, but I know what Finey means. I watched that. I thought, it does look like he's doing a Hitler thing and a moustache. But I think it would be that, you know, he's not going to do that.
No, probably not in your first game for Australia.
No, not yet.
First 10 minutes. He's only played for Australia for 10 minutes. He's got a goal. He's feeling pretty good about himself.
He's a white supremacist, so he's running around.
Yeah, we pick a lot of those in our soccer team. It's been one of the things that we've done. And the other sport.
Let's hope he never becomes the captain, because God knows what kind of armband he'll be wearing.
Oh, now stop it.
That's very good, Brian.
Yeah, it is very good. A couple of months away, the old Soccer World Cup. We've got a T20 World Cup, which is about to start, I think, in about a week's time. Australia's just played a little T20 series against India, and now all the boys head back and they get ready for games all over the place, including some games. Namibia and a few teams are playing in sort of Ballarat and Geelong and Canberra and all sorts of places have got games for this T20 World Cup. But we're the defending world champions, and no one's ever defended a T20 World Cup. I don't know how many there's been, but we are the defending champions. So hopefully Aaron Finch and the boys will do the right thing over the next couple of weeks. We've got our basketball girls at the moment in the middle of a World Cup of some description.
Is that here?
Yeah, it is. It's in Sydney.
Mm. That's good.
We lost the first game to France.
Oh, I've made a decision.
Have you?
Yeah. It's a bloody waste of time, sport.
And you're basing that on the results of which particular sport?
No, it just goes around and around and around and around and around. But my teams never win.
Well, you know.
In fact, St Kilda is so bad that in the grand final on Saturday, there were three ex-St Kilda players, and I'm pretty sure they were the three worst players on the ground.
Who are the ex-Saints that played on the weekend?
Well, Tom Hickey was terrible.
Is that one of his four clubs, is it, St Kilda?
Yeah, second club.
Okay.
How bad was he?
He did struggle, the boy. Reece Stanley.
He helped Tom. Oh, Reece Stanley was freaking hopeless as well.
Yeah, well, he's no good. But Reece Stanley killed him. That's how Tom Hickey,
Stanley was hopeless. I mean, Tom Hickey, that first two goals to, all right, what's the expression? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. How he could allow himself to be moved out of the way by Tom Hawkins twice in the first 15 minutes was embarrassing.
Yep.
I mean, that's just.
Yep.
And the one that I'd take no pleasure in, because it is a great story for Paddy McCartney.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course.
But what the hell was he doing out there?
Not much.
He was a minister without portfolio. God. In fact, at halftime, I thought they'd put him to full forward, really. I mean, he used to be a full forward.
Well, but he wasn't doing anything particularly riveting.
You know what Buddy did for the half I was there? Kept getting in the way.
Yeah, but see, last week, the Premier League final, everyone was raving about him. He's back. He's done this, done that. And then he plays this game. And
He might have been back in the preliminary final, but if they would have lost that game, it would have been because of him.
Yeah.
Because in that last minute, he was the one that they handballed to and he tried to break the tackle and that opened it up for Collingwood. So, anyhow, look, I'm not sure that extra year for Buddy is going to do Sydney much good.
And who's the other St Kilda one? You said there were three.
Oh, well, it was Hickey, McCartan and Reece Stanley.
Is he a former Saint?
He played 100 games for St Kilda.
Oh, okay. I'd completely forgotten about that, to be honest.
Yeah. Very similar to how he is at Geelong. Promises a lot, plays one game, you think he's a champion, but sort of Daniel Bandy-like.
Daniel Bandy-like. Well. I want to mention the chart. It's
Before you do.
Yeah, you're just going to completely avoid the Hawthorne story, are you?
No, I won't avoid the Hawthorne
story. I've got a scoop. Well, my sources tell me that one of Essendon's best players wanted to go to Hawthorne.
That's narrowed it down.
Yeah, it probably
one of
has.
Best players.
Mm. One of our best players.
Do you think he's one of Essendon's best players, or do other people think that?
No, I do. Okay. I think he's one of our best players.
Okay.
Wanted to go to Hawthorn, but not sure how strong he feels about that now after the racism thing. Apparently, Will Stave Heard is the coach, which might mean that I'll be jumping off him. But
really? You'd jump off him if Heard was the coach?
Well, I'll tell you this.
I don't rate him as a coach, but hang on just a sec. And they're gunning to get a CEO from my neck of the woods.
From Brisbane? Queensland. From the Gold Coast?
I'm just saying a CEO from my neck of the woods. You know, maybe it's a CEO from the banking sector. Who knows?
Greg Swan out of Brisbane?
He's a terrific bloke, Greg Swan. Has he had any experience in this field?
Who hasn't?
He's a ripper. He's an absolute great bloke.
Well, all I know is that they're looking to get a CEO from up around my way. So you read into that as you see fit.
Okay. Right.
Well, St Kilda's got the other good one, so you may as well get Greg Swan.
Well, if that's the truth, I mean, then it's fine.
You talking about Matt Finnis?
No, he's gone.
I'm not allowed to say.
No, I was asking Finney. Who are you talking about, Finney?
Oh,
no, Finnis isn't at the club anymore.
Oh, okay.
No, they'll be in Jeff Walsh.
Mm. Okay. Footy's a funny industry. Football spends an enormous amount of time preaching to the fans about loyalty and about, you know, the jumper and the colours and the history and that, and the CEOs and the assistant coaches and even of recent and the players, they all swap around like they're at, the middle of a 1968 wife swapping party.
Well, having not been to a 1968 wife swapping party.
Well, neither have I, Brian. I would have been 12. I married young, but not that young.
That's probably the time to get into it, Jeff. you got no baggage.
I was 13. I was 13 when I got into that, but I was 12 in 1968. 6th of June 1968 is our chart this week. I'll get to that in a tick. Yeah, go on, funny.
Would have been, you know, it's like buying a car wife swapping.
It's like buying a used car.
You know, I reckon there'd be a lot of bargaining at a wife swapping party. All right, I'll I swapped mine for yours, but you're going to have to throw in
some seat covers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Have you got a, you know, car radio, four-track CD player or something, or cartridge player or whatever?
Well, you're at a party, so you'd be after, well, I want a bit of your lobster and I want some of your Jim Beam and at least...
It's not that sort of party, mate. I'll take your wife, half a litre of lube. I'll take half a litre of lube and those Benoit balls you've got there.
Clearly, schooled in this area of the world is our finding.
Well, you certainly don't want to take a used, a used dildo or anything.
Yes. Okay.
Where's Brian gone? We don't need his support.
Brian's disappeared.
Just in shock.
Yeah.
I'm just in shock at the filth generated knowing that Lucy is listening to tonight's show. And I've deliberately been on my best behaviour and so that Lucy can listen to the show and enjoy it.
He's a fraud, Mum. He's a fraud.
Yeah, he is a fraud.
It's not the real him.
No, it's not. Now, Black Arm
Lucy. 5% of the time he's debauched. 15% of the time he's an altar boy.
I think he's
left his altar boy days well behind him, let me tell you. Black armbands this week. Now, I should have mentioned this bloke last week and I didn't, Dr. Alan Aylett, who passed away at the age of 88, one of the really big movers and shakers in the AFL, or the VFL as it was then, and obviously a very important figure at North Melbourne as a player and as an administrator, and then went on to the AFL and the VFL.
And
a heck of a dentist, yes, absolutely.
I went to him in the 80s because
did you?
I just got sick of, being a pop star. I said, no, I'm not having the needle and all that stuff. So I went to him because they give me the gas.
Oh.
And it was great. I was sitting in the chair and you're watching some animal documentary and it's just like stoned out of your mind on the gas. And, then he does all the dental procedure and he was lovely. He was a really good bloke.
Brian, the medicinal gas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the dental gas.
Yeah, the medicinal dental gas.
Nitrous oxide. Fuck's not special.
Yeah, and the problem was, Brian, did you take a lifetime supply home with you after your consultation with Dr. Aylett, did you?
Oh, look, if you know a dentist.
Oh, don't say that. Brian.
A canister of that with a big bag of balloons.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
We'll invite all your friends over and just do that and be laughing.
Now,
and then when you stop laughing, you're just laughing because everybody else is laughing and laughing's infectious and that's good for your health.
Also passed away this week at the age of 87, John Hamblin, the actor who, of course, Play School presenter, who passed away this week. He was a good actor too, John Hamblin.
He was good.
He should have been. He looked incredibly like... what's her name? That dingo stole my baby.
Yeah, they used him in...
He played Michael Chamberlain in one of them.
Yeah,
yes, he did.
I'm saying he should have been fingerprinted.
Oh. Yeah, no, he played Michael Chamberlain in that one, yeah. What's it called? Cry something?
That dingo took my baby.
It wasn't called that. It should have been. So he passed away this week at 87. And Louise Fletcher passed away at the age of 88, the Oscar-winning actress who was Nurse Ratchet in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, wow. She was great in that movie.
Oh, she was sensational in that movie.
Yeah, she was mean.
Yeah, she was. But she was very, very, when you saw that, you thought, well, if that hasn't got Oscar, Academy Award written all over it, I'm watching the wrong film.
Yeah.
And
she was tougher than Ken Fletcher, I'll tell you that.
she certainly was. And I'm in mourning because John Hartman, the drummer, one of the drummers with the Doobie Brothers, passed away this week at the age of 72.
Mm.
That's a sad day. So there are black armbands for this week. Our chart, let me get to our chart before we just put a couple of other little bits. It's June, June 6, 1968. Here's the top 10. Number 10, and there's a lot of doubles. So the funny, this is a funny chart. It has two Lulus, two unicorns. It's got an infestation of beetles. It has a barrel of monkeys. It has a couple of Cinderellas, believe it or not. Even with the dodgy spelling, there's still two Cinderellas in this. And it's got a lot of double-sided hits on it from the Bee Gees, mm-hmm. from the Monkees, from the from John Farnham, from who else? There's another one in there, a double-sided one in there.
The Bugamies.
The who?
The Bugamies.
The Bugamies?
Mm.
Okay. Bugger me.
39. I think they're number 39. Yeah, okay. On the chart, the Bugger Me.
Number 10 is Valerie and Tapioca Tundra by the Monkees. Number 9 is Son of Hickory Hollows, Tramp by O.C. Smith. Number 8 is The Good, the Bad and the Ugly by Hugo Montenegro. Number 7, Lady Madonna and the Inner Light by the Beatles. Number 6 is Delilah by Tom Jones. Number 5 is If I Only Had Time by John Rowles. 4 is Congratulations by Cliff Richard. 3 is Young Girl by the Union Gap. 2 is The Unicorn by the Irish Rovers, and number 1 is Honey by Bobby Goldsborough. Whew, what a weird, wonderful chart that is.
It's a weird chart in that when I looked at it first, I thought, I can't find one decent song here. But then the more I looked at it, I thought, oh, yes, that's there, and this is good, and oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, girls, that's there as well. So it was... turned out to be quite easy to find the good ones. But then when I was trying to look at the bad ones, I was going, nah, that'll be a stinker. I'll just have a little listen to that. I said, oh, that's not too bad. That's not the worst thing I've ever heard. And every one that I listened to that I disliked, thought I was going to be a stinker, it wasn't. There's a lot of mediocrity on this chart.
Oh,
but there's no... outright.
Oh, yes, there is.
Shit out.
Oh, yes, there is.
This is the worst chart ever, by the way.
I'm siding more with Finey because the songs I like on this chart, I don't love anything. I don't think there's a song on this chart that I would say, oh, I love that. There's not one of those on this chart. I haven't got one of those, but I've got three that I absolutely hate.
Mm.
I hate them. But I just here's a little exercise I did today because I had a look at this chart and I had a look at the number one song on this chart and I thought, Honey by Bobby Goldsborough. See the tree, how big it's grown, but friend, it hasn't been too long, it wasn't big. I laughed at her and she got mad the first day that she planted it was just a twig. Then the first note came. It's just the most mournful song, seriously.
Honey, I miss you.
And spoiler alert, she dies. Okay. Let me take you to, date today? The 26th of September? 2000.
Hang on, are we doing the music already?
Well, I just want to set something up. This is a little sort of slice of where we are. So that's Honey by Bobby Goldsborough, the number one song on the 6th of June 1968. Let's head to today. Here are the lyrics of the number one song in Australia and America at this particular time. Pink pussy, pink coop, no roof, made me eat my pussy, leaving, maxed out his card, fucked the total, pulled up for a check, pussy mobile, freak bitch, legs up, cash too.
That was, by the way, that was Kevin Mum.
Yeah, you're such a dobber, Finey.
And Lucy, if you're wondering who's singing that song, it's Kamal.
And Kamal went on to say, I can lick it, I can ride it while you slipping and sliding. I can do all them little tricks and keep the dick up inside it. You can smack it, you can grip it, you can go down and kiss it. And every time he leave me alone, he always tell me he miss it. That is that fabulous number one song across the world at the moment called Super Freaky Girl by Nicki Minaj and two other people.
Nicki Minaj.
Minaj, is it? As in Minaj a trois. Well, it's Nicki
it's
and her.
M-I-N-A-J.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah, but it's pronounced Minaj.
Minaj. Okay, so Nicki Minaj and a trois. That's the number one song today. So just a little microcosm of life just floating over the top of us. Now, Finey, I know that you want to talk about the Hawthorn thing.
No.
You don't?
No, if you want. if you want
it. Well, no, I think it should be talked about.
Okay.
But I wanted to get the stuff out of the road so we can talk about it. Because this is going to lead to enormous changes in a whole lot of things about, particularly about the game of, or the way football clubs are run.
What are the charges?
There's no charges at all yet.
Well, why is there a problem?
Allegations have been made.
Allegations,
yep.
As to that they what? Told him to break up with his missus and said you should have bought this child. Is that what the allegations are?
That's basically what's been reported in the paper.
Disown your family.
That's what's been reported as in the report and that was done by the Hawthorn Footy Club.
Okay, so I'm not too all favour.
And then they've named some people that, and I don't want to name them because I reckon that's where this has all got completely out of hand. To be honest, from just my observation, where there's smoke, there's fire and all those things, but there's people whose names have been tarnished already and they've had no right of any reply and neither they should because the actual thing was set up to be only talking to the people involved before that, but the report should never have been leaked until it was much more detailed and the second part of it had been done. In other words, the other side of the story, not just one side of the story.
Well, as I understand, Clarkson and Fagan have got a whole heap of mud thrown at them and I don't know whether they're guilty. Surely it should have been hushed up until they'd sorted the whole thing out and then come out with it at the result.
And to see people saying, if the allegations are true, this and this and this and this should happen, well, I don't think you should be saying that. Finey, what do you think?
Well, they are some pretty serious accusations and, you know, the story that came out of this was also that Essendon, through Kevin Sheedy, were warned about this and steered away from Alistair Clarkson to avoid another huge controversy.
Mm.
I mean, what this means for Fagan and Clarkson remains to be seen, doesn't it?
Yep, absolutely it does.
Could leave North in a terrible position because the word is that they have paid huge money to get Clarkson and the contract states that any cessation of or sacking and if they don't require his services, no matter what the reason, he has to be paid out in full. So that'd bankrupt him. Given they're already bankrupt.
Well, the DFL will cover any of that sort of thing, I would have thought, if it comes down and plays out that way. But
why have they been stood down?
No, they
stood aside. Alistair
Clarkson hasn't actually started work at North Melbourne officially yet. So he's basically.
Fagan stepped aside.
No, and Fagan's taken a leave of absence, as has. I can't think of his first name, Bert. Is it James Bert?
I don't know.
Who was the third person at the Hawthorn Footy Club at that time who was been working at Caulfield Grammar School. He has also taken a leave of absence. So no one's actually been stood down by anybody. They've stood themselves down and said, we now are going to cooperate. Not that they haven't cooperated up until now. We are now going to take part in this inquiry as it goes on.
I'm going to cop this, but you know, I'm just a Liberal. I always like to try and look at both sides of the story and sort of go, okay, well, I know what the allegations are against those people. Now, is there any way I can find in my mind why this behaviour might have been acceptable? And the best I could come up with is, like, take the Aboriginal content out of it. But if it was a white guy, well, just bear with me and then shoot me down. But if it was a white guy and he's got his mum and dad are crystal meth addicts, his missus is a freaking crystal meth addict, and if I went to him and said, look, mate, really, you should ditch these people until they get help. You know, you're going to have a football career here. you know, you got to ditch this wife. She's just fucking trouble, mate. She's going to fuck you right up. And your parents are no help. You need to get your own place and get yourself focused on football. We'll, you know, we'll help them as we can, but you've got to get yourself right. Now, that wouldn't be such a bad thing, would it?
It's none of the club's business.
Well, isn't the club? Doesn't the club have a duty of care for their players? Look, I'm not saying that I support this, but I'm saying I think it should be part of the conversation. Like, you know, it might have been a sign of due diligence and due care. We're pretty quick to jump to the, oh, it's racist and it's this and it's that. And, you know, we haven't heard from the other guys yet. And as I said, the only justification I can see for this kind of thing was that, like, these people around you are fucking you up. Pretty much what they did with Dusty's dad, didn't they?
No. Look, I go back to the reality of the situation. Who are the two clubs that have had to have an internal review because of
Collingwood and Hawthorn?
Yeah. And who are the two clubs that had an active no Aboriginal policy for decades prior to the
Collingwood
and Hawthorn?
I didn't know Hawthorn. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, they had an active for 30 years. Do not recruit any Aboriginals. So, sow and ye shall reap. You cannot have that sort of history at your club, not be honest about it, not be forthcoming and publicly address that and internally address it and think that things are going to change. And at both clubs, they never change because, as you know, there's always going to be people from that generation holding some sort of court and influence at your club because, like, you know, you've got past players, past presidents, past people of influence. They don't just leave the club and they don't change their attitudes. In fact, the older they get, probably the worse they get in that regard. So, you know, live up to your, face your past, address your past and head into a new future because until you do that, the truth is, it's been talked about, but neither club has publicly admitted it still. The fact is that these two clubs, highly successful, one of them historically the most successful club, Collingwood, claiming to be the biggest club in the competition, the other, certainly in the modern era, the most successful club, Hawthorn, have atrociously racist past, where they had, as at board level, an active policy, do not recruit black people. Well,
admit to it.
Own up.
Surely if these allegations are true, there has to be some motivation that, you know, it was best for the player. Now, I'm not saying it's right and I don't support it, but I'm just trying to explore it.
No, Finney's just said the right thing. It was best for the club.
But
the outcome was the best outcome for the club.
But how is it the best outcome for the club?
Because the bloke puts his mind on playing football and doesn't have those things. And no matter what workplace you're in, people have issues they deal with at home that they don't bring to work, that you don't know about. And maybe football clubs are too intrusive in the lives of young men and women. And is that part of what they're there to do? I mean, I don't know.
Well, they're there. They've got a duty of care for their players. And I just, in my mind, I just can't see that anybody today, especially in AFL, would be racist enough to go, yeah, let's just break up this family. Let's do that because we don't like blacks. I just can't see that as being logical. You know, to me, there has to be some motivation beyond colour. And I'm not suggesting that it's right, but it's really easy to jump. You know, there's got to be some motivation beyond colour. Like, oh, God, he's goddamn black, so I got to get rid of his missus and his family. I just don't think that's right.
Yeah, no, well, I understand what you're saying.
How about Cyril Rioli? I mean, premiership hero, cult hero at Hawthorn. He doesn't want anything to do with the club. You know, the club president, that buffhead Kennett, sees him and his missus at an airport and chucks him 20 cents and says, tell your missus to buy a new, get her jeans repaired. Like they were designer jeans, you know, with the tear in them.
Yep.
Well, might have been a joke, I don't know. And, you know, I'm not there's lots of bad jokes. So, but I'm not suggesting that there isn't a, you know, problem with racism at Hawthorn or Collingwood. I just don't see that, you know, and I'd like to find out more, but I just don't see why you would tell a person of any colour, race or gender or whatever to break up with their partner without a reason other than colour.
Their wealth, yeah, I know what you're saying. You're talking about their wealth,
and not
the colour. It doesn't
make logical sense.
Yeah. It's paternalistic, they're patronising, and they're racist. Look, it's very easy. It's because they think that young Indigenous people can't live orderly lives. You know, Alistair Clarkson going over to the flat or the house of one of these young couples and commenting that it needed to be cleaned up, that it wasn't clean enough. Go fuck yourself, really, Clarkson.
But clubs have been doing that for years. I know Rodney. He used to do spot checks on the boys. He'd go to the house with the three or four of them living and walk in and go, you know, you boys need to do some washing. You need to wipe the benches down too. I mean, I think coaches have done that for years and years with young blokes who are living on their own. God knows if they come in. If my employer had come into my flat in Toowoomba when I was living there, would have found this chook that fed income. It had been there for about 6 months, I reckon.
A lot of coaches pride themselves on not only, you know, teaching these guys how to play football and being a team, but as to being a good human being. I know Sheedy was always raving on about that. A lot of those, you know, Ross Lombardi and all them guys were always talking about, you know, how you got to get them to enrich their lives and get them on track and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's I'll be interested to see how it pans out. But
oh, we all will.
At the moment, I'm just presuming innocent until proven guilty.
Well, that is what the law actually is supposed to be. Unfortunately,
so that's what I'm doing.
The media doesn't do that. The media hangs you out to dry and convicts you, or at least makes it look like you're guilty before any evidence is put on the table of any description, really. Which I find, you know.
Yeah. So this guy
Bert has confirmed. He's publicly confirmed it.
A couple of the allegations, yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So
if it's been confirmed that they said, look, you should ditch your girlfriend.
It's not ditching your girlfriend. It's whether or not it's confirmed that they said that your partner should have an abortion. Yeah. I mean, that is just outrageous.
Oh, that's beyond any.
Yeah, but once again, I
any
just
parameters
know,
of any under, employer, to be honest.
What happened before that? You know, that's the end of the conversation.
Let's let them work that out. I don't want to get into that here. That's not what we're about, to be honest. So let's not.
No, that's not what I'm saying, though. It's like, it does sound harsh, but until we know everything, you can't really make any kind of judgment on it.
Yep. Except that it obviously is not right and shouldn't happen.
Doesn't sound very good. I'll give it that.
All right. Let's go to the 6th of June, 1968, 54 years ago.
Hang on a second.
What?
Have you ditched my segment?
Which segment?
Well, there it goes.
Your story time segment?
My sports?
Yeah, your sports story segment.
Yeah.
No, I haven't ditched it, but I'm working on the premise that you said a couple of weeks back when we were going to do it, then we didn't do it. You said, well, he won't be any less dead when we get to it next week. No, I haven't ditched the segment at all. I'm just conscious that by the time we get through the chart, we're going to be at about an hour 20 by the time we finish it. And if I throw this sports story in on top of all that. No, I love your segment. If 1963 Geelong segment against Fitzroy, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Your cricket segment, the bloke going out and making a duck. I love your stories, the
public servant football team, that was the best one.
I love it.
The venue with the racing track around.
Yeah. No, we're not ditching any segments. We're ditching Brian, but no, we're not ditching any segments.
All right. He'll be as dead next week.
He'll be as dead next week, and we'll definitely do him next week because we won't have a grand final to talk about, or hopefully we won't have a football controversy regarding what's been going on to talk about. So we will sure. do it. We'll definitely do it next week.
He'll still be dead.
But let's get to our two Lulus, our two Cinderella Rockefellers, our two unicorns, our infestation of beetles and our barrel of monkeys. All right. 1968, 6th of June, number three, Good and Bad, Mr. Fine.
All right. We'll start with the bad.
The bad.
I reckon this band's actually very useful for Brian. Because Brian sometimes doesn't do his research.
Mm-hmm. Oh, meow.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you ever don't do your research and you see this group in it, you can just put them in your bad list.
Oh.
So at number three, the 1910 Fruit Gum Company with the particularly simplistic Simple Simon Says.
Oh, that's what Simon... Yeah, simple.
Put your hand in the air, Simple Simon says. A lot of these songs have sentimental value for me. So, yeah, it is a stinker, but I kind of like it.
Oh, it was the height of the bubblegum 1968, wasn't it? 1910 Fruit Gum Company and Chewy Chewy and all those dreadful, dreadful songs.
Well, I'm seven, so all this stuff is really appealing.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I was 12. I was listening to the radio. I had the radio on as every chance I had. I was listening to the radio, so I was hearing Simon Says with awful, awful songs. So what's your good one, Finny?
Well, because it's not a good list, it's a strange top three, but I'm having to defer to Tom Jones.
Yeah.
Why, delight.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, I don't mind Delilah.
Wow.
It's good.
Jeez, Don.
Let me tell you, it's right up Tom Jones's alley.
Tiger Tom. Okay, but good vocal performance. I never really liked the song that much. And then when you listen to the lyrics, it's not all that flash either. Just quietly. I think Brian.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
We each choose our own three here, and if not often we get one like we did last week, where we all had rock on in our top three goods. Righto, Mr. Mannix, number three good, and number three bad.
Okay, number three good. You're never going to pick my number one good, but my number three good is no surprise. It's number 32, Magical Mystery Tour by the Beatles. And I was going to put Lady Madonna, but then I found Magical Mystery Tour, and I thought that's heaps better.
Well, that's an EP. No,
Lady Madonna's number seven.
Yeah, no, Lady Madonna's a double-sided hit, but the Magical Mystery Tour thing is the EP.
Yeah, I've got it. It's not really, there's no competition to Magical Mystery Tour on that particular EP.
Oh, really? Fool on the Hill's a beautiful song.
Oh, come on, Kev, please.
I Am the Walrus is, you know, for some people, one of their...
I Am the Walrus is great, yes.
And I'm sorry, Your Mother Should Know is just a good, fun Beatles song too. It wasn't a bad...
Is that it on it? Isn't Let's Fly on it? You know, it's an instrumental that George wrote and... It's just music from the movie.
I didn't write down the other stuff that was on it, but I wrote down Your Mother Should Know, Fool on the Hill, and I'm the Walrus.
Well, Fool on the Hill, you can stick that. But, yeah, the other two are good. So, yeah, that's my number three good is Magical Mystery Tour. Mm-hmm. And my number three bad, I forgot to write down the number for this, and it's not the worst song in the world, but... Here's our very own Bee Gees, and it's Jumbo.
Yep.
It's sort of like they're trying to do I Am the Walrus, and they just haven't quite got it right. But it's sort of them trying to be psychedelic, and it just didn't ring as sincere as some of their other music to me. So that's my number three bet.
Yeah, pretty poxy song, Jumbo, I must admit.
I wouldn't be so uncouth. I'm still aware that Lucy may still be listening.
No, pretty poxy song, Jumbo. My number three bad. Oh God, there's two versions of it in this chart. There's one at number two and one at number 22. Number 23, sorry. one by the Bachelors and one by the Irish Rovers. It's The Unicorn. What an awful song. What a blight on the Australian record-buying public to have actually put this one up. And I reckon the Irish Rovers one is actually the worst one because they'd given us that dreadful Orange and the Green song and then they gave us this. Well, you never hate. Just all.
Got a green alligators and geese.
Yeah.
The humpback camels and some chimpanzees. Well, I tell you, when you're learning to play guitar on an acoustic guitar, it's songs like this that got you through.
Oh, well, the Unicorn would be in, you know, Guitar for Dummies 101, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I remember my brother learning it, so it was a big song around my house.
Sorry, because, the one-armed man from The Fugitive learned how to play guitar doing that, doing the Unicorn.
Well, you know, you don't start off with, you know, Black Dog by Led Zeppelin. You start off with Little Arrows and
Little Arrows and the Unicorn. Oh, Jesus.
The Unicorn. how much is that dog in the window? You know, you got to go through the pain before you get the good songs.
How did you write 50 years after an upbringing musically of that crap?
Good. It's a total rip-off of Unicorn. Oh. I just changed the melody and slowed it down a bit.
And my number three good is I watched this the film clip of this today, and it's kind of cheesy, but I actually like it. I didn't mind this band. Actually, I thought they were pretty reasonable. And they had a couple of better songs than this, a couple of singles I bought of theirs. It's Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Titch with The Legend of Xanadu.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I stumbled across that
just different,
2 months ago.
Really different.
It's going to be shit house, but it is. It's quite experimental, but
yeah,
it works.
Yeah, it's got bits and pieces happening. I mean, there was a lot of experimental stuff on a lot of the music on this chart, you know, phasing and flanging and all sorts of things going on. Xanadu had the little talk part in the middle and they did some different bits and pieces during. I just thought it was a really interesting little song and they were, I used to love playing them on the radio just simply to be able to say Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Titch. Bit of a different name. So they were called originally something like Dave D and the Philadelphians or the Bostons or something, but they changed it and put all the names in.
Changed it to the Mix FM breakfast team.
Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Titch. Yeah, could be. Could be, you know, an ensemble that does a breakfast show. No names, no pack drill, but I believe one leading Melbourne radio broadcast breakfast personality, and I use the word personality, was as refreshed as a cricket in the hospitality room at the grand final. But anyway, we digress. Mr. Fine.
Hello.
he's had a big week. He's had a hard week. He's
number two bad.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that Brian would defend a lot of the songs on this chart by saying that they were part of his piano class or whatever he went to. Guitar lessons, Guitar 101. But I am sorry. As though the Irish have not copped enough. But to be linked with the mass stupidity that is the Unicorn, both with the Rovers and the Ruckman, the Bachelors and the Irish Rovers. I couldn't agree more, Kevin. What a terrible fucking song.
Oh, it's an awful song. It's an awful song.
And they're listing animals. There's alligators and whatever. Cats and rats. They've got to put rats in there.
Well, it's authentic.
That the favourite animal of all is the unicorn. Stupid.
It is.
And I'm sure the Irish do not appreciate that.
I'll tell you what, if you two keep it down this line of conversation, I'm ringing the RSPCA because clearly you have no empathy for the animals of our beautiful world and that's what the whole song is about. It's about saving the animals and, of course, it starts raining a bit early and ends up leaving the unicorn behind.
Mm.
The unicorns are left to drown. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, happy ending. Oh, good.
Yeah, well, you guys just shouldn't give a shit about the environment, the animals.
No. Stick your uniform and your climate change up, your clacker, Brian.
All right, then.
And your number two, good, Mr. Fine?
Well, the lyrics to that unicorn song were so bad that for a few minutes it put me off lyrics altogether. And I'm quite happy to put in The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, number two.
As a good song, yes.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Sort of a bit like this podcast. You're the good, Kevin.
Thank you. Are you going ugly?
Brian's the bad, but I don't want to be the ugly.
I couldn't possibly be the ugly.
It's a great piece of music, isn't it?
Oh, it's great. It is. It's so evocative, and the minute you start hearing it, you know, you can just see Clint Eastwood in the poncho, standing there, just eyes darting one way and another. You know somebody's going to get shot soon.
And little Eli Wallach comes running through his little gold tooth and his little sort of cheeky little rat-type grin, looking like Dustin Hoffman.
This is a cover version, this one, isn't it? Who's it by?
Hugo Montenegro. No, Enrico
Morricone wrote it, didn't he?
Hugo Montenegro did the version that was in the film and did the original... the original version of it, as far as
I know. Morricone wrote it. Montenegro played it.
And Sergio
Silvani sings it.
And
rock and roll recognises it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I got it as my number two good.
That's a good choice. Very good choice.
Thank you, Uncle Mark. We recognise the rock and roll of this particular area.
Right, what's your number two good and bad, Mannix?
Okie dokie. Number two bad. Oh, hang on. Number two good. Okay. Number two good.
Good.
I'm going to go for number 38. It's the Mighty Monkees and it's Cuddly Toy. Now, it's probably not the greatest song in the world, but, you know, as far as having an impact on me, I just thought this was the greatest song ever when I was a kid. And for that reason, I still love it. And so, yeah, and I think it's still got a... You're not the only choo-choo train
that's ever left the rain.
After Santa came, you're not the kind of girl that would tell your mother about the company you keep.
Yeah,
that's a good song. Yeah, so that's my number two. Good.
Written by the wonderful Harry Nilsson.
Ah, well, it sounds like he's pissed again. Yep. All right. Terrence alcoholic, that bug. Number 17 is my number two bad.
Number 17. Oh,
it's surprising.
Hey, what?
This is Elvis. And
Can the real Brian Mannix please join us?
No, I'm sorry.
Finally, we need Elvis to hold hands and contact the Mannix.
Yeah. No.
Something's going on.
US Mail by Elvis. This song I should have given straight to Johnny Cash. It doesn't even sound like Elvis. It sounds like a boy named Sue until about a minute in, and then he sort of does a bit of Elvis stuff. But he's doing a Johnny Cash impersonation. The music's very good. You know, it's got some really great national players playing on it. But no, Elvis, what the hell are you thinking with this one? US Mail by Elvis. Number two bad.
I reckon that's the first time you've ever dished an Elvis song.
Oh, no, I can do a whole show.
You've dished his movies.
Yeah, Elvis. Oh, his version of Old MacDonald Had a Farm. My God, the poor bastard was forced to sing.
No, but Paul McCartney's version of that is so much better than anybody else's.
And as he says in that play, you know, the Elvis guy says, "What's a man? You try singing about clam fishing and look like you mean it."
Fair enough. All right, so Cuddly Toy and US Mail by Elvis. Gee whiz, I'm very surprised by that. All right, my number two in the bad pile is, there's two versions of this in this chart as well. Two versions of the unicorn and two versions, even though they're dodgy spelling, they've spelled it differently on this Go Set National Top 40 chart. The Esther and Abby O'Farum version is spelt Cinderella Rockefeller, and the Anne and Johnny Hawker version is spelt Cinderella Rockefeller. But there are only a couple of spots different in the chart, but needed two entries. But, Cinderella Rockefeller, you're the one. Just an awful song.
You're the lady that I love.
I'm the lady. Ooh, yes. awful, 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 awful song. I've never been able to come to terms with how it was a hit. It was a number one song in England. Just staggers me.
Well, for this chart is a bit like what it was for last week for Finey. It's like when you sort of first becoming really aware of music, you're seven.
Yeah.
And I was seven, and it's sort of like, you know, Cinderella Rockefeller, I thought that was terrific, you know, because it sort of gimmicky and had the it was when you're seven, like, you kind of need those gimmicks to get you sucked in.
It was like, well, there's a lot of gimmicky songs in this, like Jennifer Eccles by the Hollies and Cinderella Rockefeller, and yeah, there's quite a few of those kind of songs that have that bit of that about them. Now, number two, good. Number one, good is Far and Away, Locked Away, but any number of songs could be here. But I'm going to go for Lazy Sunday by the Small Faces. I like the Small Faces. And it's a cheeky song, silly song. He apparently wrote it, Steve Marriott, because he had a fallout with his neighbours, and he wrote it as a joke and cracked the shits when they released it as a single. And it became a really big hit for him. So what does he know about writing hit songs? So that's my number two good, Lazy Sunday by The Small Faces, who I love. Tin Soldier, HQ Park, Lazy Sunday. Oh. They toured Australia too, and I was too young to go and watch them. Finey, let's have a look. We've got Sybil Simon Says by the 1910 Fruit Gun Company, The Unicorn by the Irish Rovers and The Bachelors. In the Bad, In the Good, Delilah by Tom Jones, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly by Hugo Montenegro. What do we got at the top?
Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you that my number one good song, I'll give you a clue, but it won't be much of a clue. This song appeared in movies, including Alive in 1993. That's the movie about the rugby team. Yep.
It's itself in the Himalayas when the plane crashes.
That's it.
The Scout, 1994.
Is that the Bruce Willis film?
Yep. It's about some cricket players that eat themselves when they're lost in the Amazon.
Fargo, 1996.
Fargo about some tennis players that eat each other in the middle of the Middle East.
Fargo's about. Fargo does have that scene of a man in a wood chipper. My Best Friend's Wedding, 1997.
Oh, wow.
Rent, 2005, and Coming Up Roses, 2011.
Are we circling around the number 27-ish?
Nope.
No. I don't think so. Number
25? Oh, it is. It is number 27.
It is 27.
Yeah, well done.
Good song.
So my number one song, pretty dynamic combination, Burt Bacharach and Hal David wrote it. Dionne Warwick sings it. Do You Know the Way to San Jose?
Yeah, good song.
It is good. So yeah, Burt Bacharach's he's got another song in this chart too, doesn't he?
Not my favourite top 40 of all time, but there you go.
Yeah, and what's your bad one?
This song is fucking horrible.
I can't find that in the chart anywhere.
Number five. Now, this man was described as a powerful singer with an emotional heart. To me, he just looks like a rugby player in a suit on the way. He looks like a rugby player who's been convicted of a serious crime wearing a court suit on the way to his trial.
Yes, well, he is a New Zealander.
John Rowles.
Yep.
If I only had time. Well, mate, you had time, and all you could come up with was this dross. The word time appears 27 times in the song, which in and of itself is annoying, but you know that whoever wrote the song was as lazy as all get out, because the last two verses go, Just if I only had time.
Yes, it is an awful song. It is
no
awful
more
song.
Words, just.
He looks like he does. You're right. He looks like Jonah Lomu in a suit, doesn't he? Is he Falau or something like that in a suit?
He looks like he would talk like this. Gee, Paul. He should be in Of Mice and Men or
yeah.
The Grapes of Wrath or something.
Yeah.
We're going to the big city now, Paul.
I think they thought he was going to be like an Engelbert Humperdinck or a, you know, or Tom Jones or one of those ones, and it never quite ticked over into the big league for him. He was pretty big.
I'll feed you, John Rawls.
Okay, all right. Now, Brian, number one, we've got Jumbo by the Bee Gees and US Mail by Elvis Presley in the bad. We've got Magical Mystery Tour and Cuddly Toy in the good. So you've gone your Beatles, you've gone your Monkees.
Yeah. Number one, bad. Now, many people have sung this song. It's never been any good. It's no better with this particular version. I noticed that Robbie Williams didn't pay tribute to Johnny Farnham, who this particular version has unleashed itself upon at the grand final. It chose You're the Voice, but Underneath the Arches by Johnny Farnham. My God, Johnny, you were just lost at this point, weren't you? This is Tommy Steele musical bullshit. This is just horrendous. You know, he sings it well, but it doesn't matter. It's just shit ass.
It is an awful song, isn't it?
Oh, look, you know, it's certainly not relevant to Australian audiences.
You know what surprised me about this song? That it actually got played? Because Friday Kind of Monday on the other side wasn't a bad little pop song, but...
That was all right, yeah.
Yeah, and then someone decided, because John was really big and he was the king of pop or whatever, that they'd flip it over and play the other side, and everyone went, ooh.
Yeah, it didn't do his career any good, I wouldn't have thought.
No, it was one of those horrible show-tuney type... You're right, it was like a skiffle song.
Now, my number one good.
So you said we're no chance of picking this.
That's right.
You got any ideas, finding what might be his number one?
Yep.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
Son of Hillary Hocker's Tramp.
No.
Oh, it's
no.
A good song. I like that.
Listen to that.
That nearly went.
It wasn't as horrible as I thought it would be, and I was going to look at that for the worst, but it was musically, I thought it was kind of okay.
It's a good song, that, Son of Hickory's.
All right, Jennifer Eccles.
No, it can't be that.
Nope.
White chalk written on red. White chalk written. No. I like Jennifer Eccles. I'm going to go with.
Hang on, what was Brian's?
No. I'm trying.
He's
I'm having a guess.
Oh, he's guessing.
I'm having a guess. I'm going to go that you might have gone with Mrs. Robinson by Simon and Garfunkel.
Probably should have, but it's sort of obvious and everything. But no, I listened to this and I thought, this is a great song. And you guys have just spent the last 5 minutes hanging shit on it. But I think If I Only Had Time, number five.
Oh, you can't be serious.
I think it's a poor man's My Way. I think it's really beautiful. I think the lyrics are great. I think the melody's really cool. I can imagine Elvis singing
what
it.
What song is it?
The John Rawls song.
That's it. I'm done.
No, I think it's really sad and beautiful. And I think he sings the shit out of it. If I only had time. Only time. I could say, if I let myself go, I'd get a bit weepy over it.
Yeah, me too, you know? But not in the same way you are.
Look, sorry, boys, but you're going to go with your heart with these matters. And I really enjoyed it. I listened to it tonight and I thought, that's really good. I like it. You know, it's like, time, you worry about how many times he says time. Well, have a listen to My Way and see how many times he says I.
I'd rather have a clap than listen to that song again.
Well, you can have both.
And by the way, Mum, if you're listening, I've never had it before. And if you're not listening, I've had it a couple of times.
Non specific, well, you're a status.
You were absolutely 100% correct, Brian. There is no way known in the universe. I would have gone through the other 39 songs on this list before I got to that one.
Yeah, well,
because it was so close to being in my top three worst. But Honey by Bobby Goldsboro is so much a song I just hate, song I just can't stand. And I did like some of the things Bobby Goldsboro did. He did a little thing early called Little Things. Then I didn't mind some of the first time, but Honey, Oh, God, what a mournful, bloody song. And she dies in the end. And it's like, it's a bit like Seasons in the Sun by Terry Jackson. It's one of those songs when you hear it, you go, oh, God.
What, the Queen? It's like the life of the Queen of England.
Yes. So Honey by Bobby Goldsworth was my number one bad. My number one good is from a movie. It's been in the only movie that I can remember it being in was the one that it was the theme song for. And my number one song is Lulu's To Sir With Love. I think it's beautifully done, beautifully sung, lovely lyric, and that film was such a good film. And Sidney Poitier was brilliant.
Oh, Brian, done up Brian's all over it.
Why?
No, for obvious reasons, Brian.
What? 48? Lulu? What am I missing?
It's a good, well, let's just say it's a good song and yours is shithouse.
Yes. I want to mention a couple of songs that are in this. Hide and Seek by Somebody's Image, which is Russell Morris's original band, was in this chart. That's a good little song. And a thing called The Pastoral Symphony doing Love Machine, which actually has vocals by Ronnie Charles, who's on the current version of Life of Brian, and Glenn Shorrock's on that as well, Love Machine. And apart from that, Dock of the Bay is one that I agonised over putting in too.
Yeah. A Pitch Gives a Match Stick Men by Status Quo is not a bad one.
Yeah, funny song though. Yeah, really strange song.
Yeah, they haven't really hit their straps yet, have they?
And Mrs. Robinson's a great song. Really good song.
That's terrific. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just trying to steer clear away of the obviously good ones, you know, yeah. As long as they get a mention.
Sky Pilot by Eric Burdon is not a bad little song either. It's part two, that's number 40, but that's the ballad part of it, which is like
That's the bit that it's another one. I thought, oh, yeah, this will be a pile of shit. And I listened to it. I thought, oh, yeah, this is a bit sort of psychedelic. And
yeah, it's got to be.
I liked the guitar line. And I thought, no, this isn't shit house. This is not bad.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a lot of songs that weren't quite shit enough to be shit for me.
Yeah, it's a very funny chart. It's up on our Facebook page and all that, so you can make some comments and after you listen to the episode. Thank you, Finey. We will do, I promise you, we will do your sports story next week. Finey's story time will return next week.
Thank you. Now just a little aside.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what today is in Perth?
10 race program at Belmont? No?
No.
Is it Labor Day in Perth today?
No, it is the first King's birthday holiday anywhere in the world.
Oh, is this their Queen's birthday weekend?
Yep.
I knew it was a holiday in Perth, but I couldn't work out why. Ah.
King Charles.
Anywhere in the world?
Yeah, the first King's birthday.
Wow. There you go. Yeah,
Perth, something for you.
Perth doesn't lead the world in many things, but that would be one of them.
No, and I would say from this week's chart, number 18, and I wouldn't be doing this podcast.
If I were a carpenter.
Yeah. Well, no, I wouldn't be on Rock and Roll, would I?
No, you wouldn't be, but you're a deli, you're a deli owner, you're a businessman, you're Lenny's Fine Foods there in North Caulfield.
Yeah, and if I were a carpenter, I'd save a fucking fortune on the renovation.
I can hear that resonating for a while. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Finey. Have a wonderful week, boys, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hang on a minute. I've just got some quick renovation stories.
Oh, have you? What have you done?
Well, I've got these mirrors, right,
that came
with the joint, and I finally hung one up the other day, and it looks like Franco Cotto's moved in. It's all gold around the thing. It's like, oh, no. So I've just been busy painting the frames of my mirror.
Well, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
If you want your mirrors to look better, you know what you need to do?
Stop looking in them.
Stop looking in front of them.
Yeah, right. So I'll be finding out how that's turned out. I'll be pulling the tape off around the mirror and see what sort of a job I've done after this. So
hang on, they were gold frames around the mirror. What have you painted them?
Black.
Gold.
But they're still textured with things. I might have to get Joe to sand them down and start again. But I'll bring it in now and see how we go.
All right.
You know that.
Look at me doing shit, but like a real man.
Hang on. Do you know on the Gold Coast, in Surfers Paradise, that carries a 7-year prison sentence? Painting over anything. Painting over anything gold-coloured.
Yeah. You also get fined if you wear long pants on the Gold Coast. And
not if there's pictures of Bob Marley all over them, then you're fine.
Oh, is that right? You're getting up with the fashion, local fashion, are you?
Well, I've got these Bob Marley hippie pants I walk around in and thongs like I just cut out some Byron Bay.
You get 12 months in prison if you can pronounce hospital and ambulance.
Happy renovating, Brian, and you too, Finny, and I'll talk to you boys next week.
Cheers, boys.
Bye. Mum, it was Kevin that was doing all the swearing.
You're such a dober. See you, boys.
You've just experienced Ruck and Roll. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.